From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM, split show for you. Later tonight, an incredible UFO investigation. Here's what's happening. A 6.7 magnitude earthquake strikes near Port Hardy, Canada. It's near Vancouver Island tonight. No reports of damage or injuries, but boy, it's getting closer to LA, is it not? At least 40 U.S. veterans died waiting for appointments at the Phoenix Veterans Affairs healthcare system, many of whom were placed on a secret waiting list, waiting for at least a year. The secret list was part of an elaborate scheme designed by veteran affairs managers in Phoenix who apparently were trying to hide that 1,400 to 1,600 sick veterans were forced to wait months to see a doctor, according to a recently retired top VA doctor and several high-level sources. Now, for 6 months, CNN has been reporting on extended delays in health care appointments suffered by veterans across the country and who died while waiting for appointments and care. Nurse Joyce Riley has been saying that on this program as well. But the new revelations about the Phoenix VA are perhaps the most disturbing and striking to come to light thus far. This is criminal. Now, here's a pattern that's developing. This is something that I see. Maybe you do, too. A contingent of U.S. Army paratroopers arrived in Poland, the first of what will be persistent presence of U.S. troops as the crisis in nearby Ukraine continues to unfold. The company-sized contingent will conduct training exercises with Polish counterparts, and they are visiting at the request of Poland. But what else? Russia will respond if its interests in the Ukraine are attacked, according to their foreign minister. He said this on state television. Watch it unfold. And President Barack Obama has assured Japan that the islands at the center of its territorial dispute with China are covered by a bilateral defense treaty. Now, do you see the pattern? Georgia Governor Nathan Deal, by the way, has signed a wide-ranging gun bill into law that has critics howling and proponents applauding. The Safe Carry Protection Act of 2014 specifies where Georgia residents can carry weapons, included are provisions that allow residents who have concealed carry permits to take guns into some bars, churches, school zones, government buildings, and certain parts of airports. John Lott, nationally known author, of course, of More Guns, Less Crime. John, give me your reaction first and foremost to this bill.
Well, I think it's about time that Georgia eliminates some of these gun-free zones. You and I have talked many times about the problems that these banned areas create, that it just is a magnet for bad people because they know that their potential victims aren't going to be able to defend themselves. I would say this hyperventilation about the law, though, is a bit much because Georgia was actually just becoming more similar to a lot of other states. Almost all the states that allow concealed carry, which is all of them now, allow people to take their permanent concealed handguns into places that serve alcohol, for example, which is all this bill does. And it allows you to go and lock up your gun in your car in the school parking lot if you're there. And a number of states allow that, too. So, you know, it's going to be this type of thing where gun control advocates predict some type of disaster is going to occur, and we haven't seen that anyplace else, and we're not going to see it here.
No, not at all. John, thank you so much. You're always on top of these stories for us. A metal object that washed ashore on Australia's coast was not from Malaysia Airlines Flight 370. Detailed pictures of the object were enough to convince investigators that it was not a lead in the search of the missing plane. Also, some officials are now starting to ponder whether the plane might have landed somewhere. Something that we have theorized since the beginning of this March 8th disaster. Divers have recovered almost 160 bodies from a submerged South Korean ferry, but have all but given up hope of finding any air pockets where some of those still missing might have found some refuge. The death toll from the ferry disaster increased to 159, with 143 still missing. The ferry, carrying 476 passengers, capsized last week, 12 miles off the coast of an island. Very sad story. Most of them were students. Captain Kelly Sweeney with us. Kelly, there are arrests being made here. Do you think that's appropriate?
Yes, I do, George, and ahoy to you and everybody. At this point, the operation, as you said, is a body recovery operation and not a rescue. But after recovering the bodies, the ship is going to likely be salvaged for the investigation. And now, talking about the investigation, that's going to include not only the captain and crew's actions on board, but the billionaire family that owns that ship. Because international safety regulations hold the executives of a company as liable in many cases as the officers and crew on board for their part in a disaster like this. And one thing that did come out that was totally unacceptable by professional mariner standards, that it was confirmed that the first distress call for help that was received ashore was from a passenger's cell phone.
Little boy.
And not a radio message from a crew member, which it should have been. And as I said, that is totally unacceptable by professional mariner standards.
You know, these ships, these capsizing of ships, just happening a little too much, Kelly.
Yes, there's a lot of them happening, George. There have been 100 major passenger vessel accidents since 2002 in the last 12 years. And there's been some significant ones. This is one of the major ones, but there have been a number of others. You know, the Costa Concordia was a terrible one over in Italy, and there's been a number of others. And so hopefully some new regulations that are designed to improve the safety awareness of passengers on board ships that don't go into effect internationally until next year will be applied with rigorously and hopefully help reduce some of these things.
All right, Kelly, did you enjoy your Beyond Belief taping last weekend?
I sure did, George. It was great meeting you in person. I had a wonderful time. Francis and I enjoyed meeting you, and everybody on your staff there was wonderful. And our thanks to all of them.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to when they air that. You did a great job for us, Kelly. Thank you.
Thank you, George.
Are you afraid of dying? Up next, Dr. Judith Orloff joins us. The Ecstasy of Surrender. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Dr. Judith Orloff is a medical intuitive, board-certified psychiatrist, author, of course, of a number of books, including The Ecstasy of Surrender. We are going to be talking with her about conquering the fear of death and what's going on in the afterlife. Judith, always a pleasure. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you, George. It's good to be on your show.
You know, there are a number of people who are petrified of dying. You know, we all want to go as long as we can, but why that fear factor?
Well, you know, I'm a physician, so I work in a medical healthcare system that has a terrible death phobia, and it really permeates how terminal patients are treated, and it just has an extremely negative effect on health and healing. And I think, you know, we're so in our heads as a Western society that we don't trust our intuition to be able to explore what's on the other side. And a lot of scientific thinkers poo-poo the mediums and anybody who has access to the other side. And what I'm saying in The Ecstasy of Surrender is death is our ultimate surrender. Everybody has to surrender to it. Everybody has to let go to it. And there's so much fear about it that I want to help people surrender their fear. It's very, very possible. As people think they don't know what's on the other side, but in fact, there's a meditation in the book where I take people into the death space in order to relieve the fear of death. And once your fear of death is relieved, you can live your life to the fullest now and not have, you know, that fear that what's going to happen after this life? You know, am I going to be okay? Am I going to be intact? And the answer is yes.
Well, you know, I have a simple theory about that, Judith, and that is, one, and by the way, I believe in the afterlife. But so that helps you, I guess, when you think about dying. But if you don't believe in it, and let's say you're wrong, and it's not, there's nothing there, you're not going to know anyway. So it doesn't
that's
matter.
Right. It's too late.
It doesn't matter.
That's very funny. But, there is something there. And even for skeptics and even for people who don't believe anything, you know, once they get to that point, they will see. I mean, there's, you know, as I've written, there's so many near-death experiences, and you've had so many great people on your show who talked about, you know, having a near-death experience and coming back and what the other side looks like. But what I'm here to say as a psychiatrist and intuitive is that you don't have to die in order to know the other side. And that by simply opening up your consciousness and your awareness and letting go without fear to what that knowledge is, I mean, you can get a firsthand experience of the other side tonight simply by meditating on it and really surrendering to that experience. It's not something you have to, you know, go through a medical crisis in order to experience. Anyone could experience it if they open up their intuition.
Well, that's right. And, you know, the tragedy of death, Judith, is, I think, represented by, for example, what is happening near South Korea with that ferry that capsized, yeah. And most of those young children are dead. Tragically, my gosh, I'm just thinking about them drowning and being trapped in rooms and things like that. That is the sad part of living and dying. But I have always equated living as almost like a racetrack in a horse race, and that the home stretch, that's it. When, you know, when you cross that finish line, you've done it. And to me, the finish line is the ultimate, and that's dying. You might as well make that sprint home the best you can. Because, you know, it comes around once.
It comes around once. But you could make the most of it now, you know, just as you said, by realizing there is an end in, you know, however many 50 or 100 years, none of us will be here. And so that's just a fact. But to me, as a physician and an intuitive, that's the good news. You know, it's beautiful to be alive and make the most of your life. But our spirits are trapped in these bodies in a certain sense. And that when we pass over, we're liberated into the hugeness of consciousness and love, or whatever you want to call it, of spirit, that we get to get bigger and meet our true nature again. And I've worked with many dying patients who had a fear of death, and I've taken them on meditations to the other side so they could experience firsthand in their bodies, in themselves, that there's nothing to be afraid of. And then the passage is so much smoother once you lose that fear.
What convinced you that the other side truly exists?
Well, I had a near-death experience when I was 16, and I wrote about it in Second Sight, where I was going in a small Mini Cooper up in Malibu Canyon with a guy I just met at a party, and we were talking and not paying much attention to the road, and this little car went over the cliff 8 times.
Ugh.
I know. And I remember, I mean, in my body, in my cells, you know, what it was like to have that car bounce against the cliff 8 times. And at the same time, I had the dual awareness of going to a tunnel where I was amazingly safe, and there was swirling atoms, blue-green of color, and it kept me safe as we went over the cliff 8 times, and we ended up hanging over a precipice, you know, basically unharmed. And so from that moment on, I mean, I knew that there I was safe. And I also knew that, you know, I was very protected. I'd had a lot of guidance in my life and protection.
Yeah.
And so there is another side. And the other side is the good news. It's, you know, imagine if you didn't have anything to be afraid of. But that means you have to decondition yourself of all the programming that Western society has instilled in your brain, which is, you know, a lot. But that's why I write about surrender and letting go of what doesn't serve us and all of those really propagandized beliefs about what death is.
Do you think some of our military people, Judith, have learned not to be afraid of dying? Because some of them are pretty darn brave.
Oh, they're so brave. They're so brave. I think, you know, in their hearts, they have a lot of faith and belief. You know, a lot of the military, and they have a lot of faith and belief that gets them through. And they've experienced their friends, you know, almost dying and coming back. I mean, this is not an unusual experience, having a near-death experience. It's quite common with people. I mean, there are over, I think, 13 million people who have reported very similar experiences. And so how could that be explained by lack of oxygen to the brain? Now, they're so similar. And what's so striking is that everyone comes back with love as a priority, with service as a priority, with their fear of death lifted.
Well, and like a police officer, he or she really doesn't know if, you know, this is going to be their last day. I mean, I can imagine what goes through their heads when they're walking up to a car at night that they stopped. I mean, they don't know what the heck to expect, do they?
No, they don't. They don't, but they're incredibly courageous. And I've worked with people in, you know, police officers who are training themselves to listen to their intuition, you know, which is, you know, basic, you know, to survival. So to stay out of dangerous circumstances or ones that could blow up in a second. But I want to say that it's not only police officers who could die at any moment. Our lives, you know, are tenuous in that sense that we have to grab the moment and live in it. We don't know what will happen. That's why the surrender, the letting go is to the moment and reeling back all the fear and the negative stories you tell yourself, not only about death, but your own life, you know, about the worry and the fears. And, you know, learn from the dying. Learn from those who are reaching the edge. They never said, I wish I could have worked more. I wish I had more money. They always say, I wish I had more love, or I lived the kind of life that, you know, I took risks. I wasn't so dependent on other people's opinions. You know, if we can learn that now, I mean, there are huge lessons from the dying we could use in our everyday life.
How would people react if they knew the date that they were going to die?
Well, I think people are different, but that would be pretty scary because it doesn't leave room for the mystery. There's something, I mean, I come from a Taoist tradition, and so the day of death in our tradition is a destined day. And you can try to change it as much as you can. You can run from death in Timbuktu, but that plane will find you there and land on your head if you're meant to die. You know, so I, you know, that we have that kind of belief system. But I think there's a great mystery to not knowing certain things in life and surrendering to the flow of your life. If you knew, too much would be constructed. Now, I don't think it would bring people a lot of security. I think they would dread the day, you know, whereas now it's more open-ended and that living life is such a mystery.
Well, let's assume, though, that you could not change the outcome. So if you knew that you're going to die at 85 or at 32, either one, don't you think you'd be able to then just adjust? I mean, obviously, more of a shock to someone who knows they're going to die at 32. But if you really knew that you're going to live until you're 85 years old, let's say, you would have all these years to prepare to, maybe you would say, well, I'm going to save money in a different way because I'm going to live until I'm 85. So
right,
I want to be able to spread it out and enjoy it. Or if you knew, you know what, if let's say you're 23 years old and you know you're going to be dead at 32, you've got 9 years, you know what, I'm going to have one heck of a run.
Yes. Yes, but I believe that's how we need to live anyways. That's surrendering
every day.
To the moment. Every day you're going to have a heck of a run every day. And that you have to live as if each moment is your last. I think that's the only way to live life, really. I mean, that's how you're going to get the most out of it. And it means surrendering your obsession about the future and bringing it back to the now. I mean, that's what my book is about. You know, it's about letting go of fear, letting go of worry, and bringing yourself back to the moment and letting yourself enjoy your life. You know, really take risks. Get into it. Don't hold anything back anymore. And learning about death and knowing that there is an end, I think, can help us to live life more fully.
Well, with Dr. Judith Orloff, her book, The Ecstasy of Surrender, and we do have a poll up for you on how you feel about dying, if you're afraid or not, just go to coasttocoastam.com. It's the Insta poll in the highlight reel. If your browser's already open, you're going to have to hit refresh to pop that back up. But go ahead and vote on that. We'll share some of those results later on. Dr. Orloff is with us for 2 hours. We'll take phone calls next hour. Judith, for folks who want to dive into the book, The Ecstasy of Surrender, available now for them?
Yes, it's on Amazon, and it's also on my website, drjudithorloff.com.
You know, when so many people from all walks of life talk about living and dying, have you found that different customs, different traditions look at death differently?
Oh, absolutely. Our Western society is so death-phobic. It's unbelievable. Now, people don't even like to think about it. You know, they're afraid that, you know, if they think about it or they help a grieving friend, you know, who just suffered a loss do that, that it's going to be contagious. I remember when my mother was dying, a friend of mine totally left the scene and wasn't around to help or support. And she admitted later on that she was afraid if she did that, her own mother would die.
Gosh, Judith, we're going to come back, talk much more. We're going to talk about parallel universes, Ouija boards, this meditation you have to experience death, and so much more on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Dr. Judith Orloff with us, her latest book, The Ecstasy of Surrender. Judith, our poll is up, and about 58% of the people, when asked if they're fearful of what happens when you die, they simply say no. 58%, and 29% say they are afraid, and then 13% are on the fence. What do you think of that?
I think that's fabulous. I think that's a wonderful percentage. You know, if truly they're not afraid, then they don't have to have that lurking in their subconscious. But the 29% that were brave enough to admit they were afraid, there's something to be done about that in terms of lifting your fear. You don't have to just stay afraid. What I suggest in the book is that people list their fears. What are people typically afraid of? That they won't exist, that they'll be in oblivion, that they'll be lonely, that one person was afraid no one would come to meet them because they didn't have any friends or family here, you know, on the other side, and they didn't want their regular family to meet them because they were estranged from them. So what are your fears of death? And then begin to, in meditation, with the death meditation that I present in the book, begin to feel what death is. Everybody can do that if you close your eyes and you begin to just feel what that is. And then what a lot of people find is that their hearts open, they start feeling this warm, kind of fuzzy, taken care of feeling, and all concerns begin to lift. It's a very, very beautiful feeling. I think those 29% of your poll, you know, can practice this. Sometimes people are afraid to do it because they're afraid they'll die if they invite death in. But I've been meditating with death for years because I'm very attracted to that state and extremely relaxing to me to meditate on death. And, you know, I don't think I'm afraid of it. You know, I've had so many experiences, and I helped both of my parents over to the other side and have been with them on their deathbeds, that I don't think I'm afraid of it, but, you know, who knows? You get to the end. you never know. It's totally spontaneous what happens. You have to surrender.
And let me, of the 58% that aren't afraid of the other side or dying, do you think most of them are spiritual or religious?
I think so, because they must have either that or extremely intuitive or aware of consciousness, because death is just a huge consciousness shift. And it is true, we won't have our bodies. That's what really freaks people out. Will I exist without the body? Is there anything to me without my body, without my brain, without the way we perceive things on Earth? That's, I think, the biggest fear when I talk to my patients. But I think when people have spiritual belief systems and they're open to a higher power greater than themselves, you know, they're able to see the workings of the mysterious in their mundane lives, and that faith and that belief can take people a long ways. And it goes beyond this physical realm into the spiritual realm, which is non-physical. But for the Western society, you know, to get that we exist beyond the physical or the brain, it blows their mind. I mean, my physician colleagues are so afraid of death and the idea that we exist beyond physical form, and that our spirits are housed in our bodies and we just travel on afterwards. That is something I was never taught in medical school. You know, there's a lot of fear, and with terminal patients, a lot of times physicians just leave the room or they start talking in technical language because they're so afraid. And when someone dies, you want the physician or whoever is there to have light in their eyes and to have more of a carefree attitude and to help the person over. You don't want somebody afraid sitting with you at your bedside.
No.
It's the worst feeling.
You don't need that. That's for
no.
sure.
No.
Let's talk about this meditation experience in order to feel death. How do you do it?
Yes. Well, you know, in the ecstasy of surrender, and it's surrendering to death. It's really letting go to it little by little. What the meditation is that I ask everyone to get very quiet and begin to breathe and relax And when the regular thoughts come, everyday thoughts, to picture them like clouds passing by in the sky, just really get comfortable and centered in your body. And then very slowly picture death as an energy that's maybe 10 feet away, and begin to feel any changes in your body or any intuitions that you might get about it, and to very slowly and gradually bring death closer so that you can sense and feel it at a distance, maybe 8 feet, 5 feet, 3 feet. And then when people are ready, and when the way I work with patients is to ask them to invite death in their body, which is a bit of a leap for some people if there's fear. But that is the revelation, that is the surrender, because you can feel how beautiful it is and how there's nothing to be afraid of once you get close to it. It's something that's so beautiful and natural. And if you're alive, if it's not your time to go, it certainly won't kill you. You know, a lot of people are afraid of that if they invite death in, they'll die. And it's not like that. It's just exploring consciousness.
That's reminds me of the old Twilight Zone movie. I think it was with Agnes Moorehead. She was afraid of letting death into her apartment.
Oh, yes. I remember
that one.
Yes, but there was so much fear and terror associated with that. But what people find when they've had near-death experiences or are about to die, like Steve Jobs said when he was on his last words, you know, were, oh, wow. You know, that's what he was looking at. Oh, wow. Can you imagine?
Are we visited by our departed loved ones or some kind of helper at the moment of death?
Oh, I think so. And throughout life, I mean, I work with patients on premonitions about death. You know, if they've had a loved one that's passed on, you know, or if you're about to go, you could have premonitions. And oftentimes loved ones come back and to tell us that they're all right. You know, they come back. And they're usually when they're the most healthy in their lives, at their prime, and they want to relieve our fear because they're fine. They've traveled on, but they seem to be concerned about the living and how worried the living are. So they're very generous in terms of coming back to let people know. And sometimes, you know, we could have premonitions of somebody's death that's about to occur. And I had that as a child where I had a premonition that one of my parents' friends was going to make a suicide attempt and die. And I'll never forget the look on their faces when I told them that. It was like their faces sunk. And they said, how could you say such negative things about my friends? Now, why do you say such terrible things? And I felt like kind of the bad seed when I was a child and I had premonitions. But the man committed suicide.
Oh, geez. And that was Gladys Cooper, not Agnes Moorehead, who played that old woman in Nothing in the Dark. And Death was played by Robert Redford, by the way.
Oh, my God.
One of his early things.
Fantastic.
So you're like me. Ouija boards aren't supposed to be played with, or no?
Well, I'm very wary of Ouija boards. I've seen people get into tremendous trouble with Ouija boards because what Ouija boards are is that you are inviting the spirit world in, and you have no idea who you're going to get. And so a lot of people just play with them who aren't prepared for that. And you could get advice because with Ouija boards, you're opening yourself up to spirit. And the impish spirits might come or negative spirits might come or dark spirits. You don't know who's giving you advice. But what you don't want to do ever is follow bad advice or invite negative energy in. And unfortunately, that's what happens with Ouija boards because you don't know what you're getting. So I don't suggest that people play with them. I've seen dangerous things happen, and people really, you know, begin to attract into their lives things that they don't want as a result.
Death is somewhat like a dream. Might that be exactly what it is, a long, long dream?
Yes, I liken death to the sleep state and the dream state because every night we surrender into sleep. And we give up our awareness of our physical form and just go into a dream state. And I think death can be very similar to that. I mean, are we afraid to go into sleep in dreams? Not usually. Not, you know, there's nothing to be afraid of. And it's the same thing. It's again, you have to be an explorer of consciousness and surrender to that. If you keep clutching and holding back and not allowing yourself to explore the mystery, and what's there, then that creates tension and a lot of fear. But if you let yourself explore the dream, I mean, so the native traditions feel that our waking state is a dream. So what a dream is, it's relative.
Might be parallel universes. What do you think of them, and how do they tie into this?
Well, I think death is a parallel universe. It exists all the time. It's always been with you, and it will never go anywhere, but it doesn't come and take you, as some people think. It's just an existing awareness that is parallel, and at some point, your destiny is going to dovetail with it. And at that point, you will go down that path. And it's something very natural, but a parallel universe is something that really interests a lot of people.
And it's relatively new now, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. But the idea that a doppelganger could exist, or somebody who is your mirror, to live in another universe who is very similar to you. No, it could be the death universe. Who knows? I mean, this is so exciting. And it's really frontiers of consciousness that we're talking about. But in order to explore all this, I want to stress that you have to surrender the expectations or the limitations of the linear mind. I mean, this is where sometimes scientists can be held back because they can't allow themselves to explore all the possibilities of reality. And that's where you have to let go to it and really trust in terms of intuitive guidance about where you're led, and the guidance that you get to learn about certain things involving this life or other lives or parallel universes. I mean, there are so many possibilities of consciousness. It can boggle the linear mind and kind of scare it. But if you listen to your intuition, which is non-linear knowledge, and you begin to tap into that in yourself, then you become privy to certain knowledge. And that could be about parallel universes, or that death is safe, and you really know it in your being. And you use that knowledge to help others in this life. And I think that's very important. That's with intuition, you get a certain power. And when you get that power, you have to use it for the good. And that's why Ouija boards I'm against, because sometimes, it really harms people. But what I encourage people is to surrender, their linear mind as much as they can when they're exploring these levels of consciousness, and let themselves go with it. There's so much to explore. And with the death meditation, I invite people to use it in the book, and very slowly, if you're scared, or the 29% of your poll that was scared of death, just take it really slowly and just see what you experience. I mean, I'm a physician, and I've worked, over 20 years with patients, and I've had lots of experience with death. And I could only say that if you allow yourself the chance to experience it, it can relieve all your fear and be such a revelation, and even ecstatic. I use the word ecstasy in the title on purpose, the ecstasy of surrender, because when you surrender to this energy or love in general, you'll feel a kind of ecstasy.
Well, it's up to now 61% aren't fearful of dying, so it's growing a little bit. Maybe listening to you, they feel a little more comfortable.
Oh, well, I hope so. And I hope people actually were doing the meditation as I was talking about it. And they're able to feel through the transmission of my words, what I'm talking about. It's not just a mental construct for me. It's one of the most important things, in my being, in my life, to know this and to have that confidence and impart it to other people. Because the expansion and the love and the healing that comes from that, you could bring that into your life. The people who have experienced the near-death experiences, they come back and they help others. That's what they want to do with it. Now, it's very service-oriented, very love-oriented. So once you know that what death is, not through physical crisis or emotional crisis, but just through choice, you could come back and your whole perspective can change on life instantly.
In my career, Judith, I've had a few shows where I've died on the air.
Really?
Literally.
Really?
I don't mean that kind of dying. I mean, my show went down the tubes. This is not one of them, not to worry. I want to ask you about suicides for a moment. The person who's about ready to commit suicide, are they afraid?
Oh, yes. I mean, I've tuned in to people who have committed suicide. intuitively, and it's very, very scary what happens. And it's not in a moralistic sense. I'm not talking about that at all, because I personally believe that there are many lives and you have many chances to work things through. So it's not at all judgmental where I'm coming from. But when I intuitively have tuned in to people who've blown their brains out, let's say, the confusion of where they are is so intense, and the disorientation and the suffering and the disconnection from who they are for a time period is so intense. Nobody wants to go through that. You don't instantly get relieved into a joyous state when you commit suicide, or especially a violent death. A violent death is very, very disorienting, and it's extremely painful. I had a friend who killed herself with a rifle, and it was extremely wrenching to all of her loved ones that she left here. But tuning into her, believe me, it's not a place you want to be. It's no. Not a relief of suffering. Eventually, I feel, you know, the soul does come back to the light. Absolutely. But that period, that interim, people don't want to experience that.
Why are people so terrified of dying? Those people who are. Is it the fact that they may not have accomplished everything they wanted to? Is it the physical fear of how they're dying, whether it's in a plane crash or a car crash or God knows what? What are they afraid of?
Yeah, I think it's all that. And I think it's afraid of losing their loved ones and of being separated from their spouses or their families, you know, or leaving things undone, things that they wish they would have done. But the fear of loss is huge. And who True. Would they be without their loved ones? You know, who wants to leave your beloved spouse? I mean, who wants that? Nobody, but it's inevitable.
I would be more scared of leaving things undone than the actual dying.
Right. Yeah, that's a fear that people have, leaving things undone, things you would have liked to have done. And so that's why you want to do that now, so you don't have that happening when you're on your deathbed. You want to do everything you possibly can to fulfill your destiny here, or to do what your soul needs to do here. And don't put it off. You know, don't put it off. Do it now. And then when you get to that point of transition, hopefully you'll be ready to let everything go. Hopefully you'll look back and you'll say, I did what I could. You know, I did my best, and I accomplished hopefully all things or most things. But also, George, a lot of times people are afraid of suffering and pain more than they are of the transition.
They do have pain or cancer or some kind of illness like that, where it's almost like they're being tortured, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Oh, it can be. You know, horrible suffering that people go through. But I want to tell you that as a physician, though, working with, you know, such patients, is that when they near death and they get near the transition, things begin to shift and vistas begin to open and they begin to leave the body. A lot of times people leave the body even, you know, weeks before they actually make the transition. They get ready to leave. And it's just a whole, you start to see everything differently. I mean, they see their physical body degenerating, but yet they feel this enormous well-being of their spirit. And that's what I want to convey to everyone, is the well-being of the spirit. If you can surrender to the fact that you're more than your mind and your brain, that's so hard for Westerners. And when you can let go of that and begin to sense who you really are, then fear begins to lift.
We're going to take phone calls next hour with Dr. Judith Orloff, author of The Ecstasy of Surrender. Questions about death and dying. Are you afraid? You want to share that story with us? Or maybe you really were confronted by death. You might want to share that with us, too. Her website linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. And we are always available for you by emailing george@coasttocoastam.com. And don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. You can do all that at coasttocoastam.com. And while you're there, hit the Coast Store and pick up the free apps for your iPhone or your Android. We'll be back.